Yes, after a year-long search, some 384 days, we had Gale, Watson, Wheeler, Harley, Frydenberg. No, it's now Andrew Dillon, who is the new chief executive-elect of the AFL, and the current chief will stay until at least October. It's been a big week in the AFL. Welcome to the Footy Podcast. I'm your host, Will Hogan. On today's show, we'll talk all things Andrew Dillon and Gillen. Tasmania has finally arrived. What's next? Plus, as always, we'll take a deep dive into the biggest trade news and take a look at Harley Reid in the VFL. First up, we speak to John Ralph about Monday's big CEO announcement. Let's do it. Well, yes, we're joined by John Ralph, who was at the big announcement yesterday. Ralphie, thanks for jumping on.
Great to be with you.
Now, it was a huge decision. It's been, what, 837 days or 600, whatever.
538 that he will be there eventually.
Days, yes. We finally got there, but Andrew Dillon is now the chief executive-elect. What's his big issues coming ahead to next year and then the years to come?
Yeah, it's a spectacular appointment. There's a couple of things that's really hard to justify. It's hard to justify why Brendan Gale was never really seen to be in the race, and Mark Robertson's written a fantastic column about that. It's really hard to justify why Gil McLachlan's there for the next 5 months. I think the best explanation of that one is that Richard Goyder wanted him to be there.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how much Andrew Dillon wanted him to be there, even though, of course, you know, he's made that case really publicly. The issues immediately are small things. And then the issues for the next couple of years are Tasmania, the Hawthorn investigation, and obviously the CBA coming up. So a couple of the little ones, you know, the 7:20 start time, everyone's obsessed with that for Friday nights. I don't think it's good news for the fans. I think the AFL really feels like they find the right balance point of allowing Channel 7 to do better Homes and Gardens. It still rates crazily. It still does really well in terms of the attendances.
Do you watch it, Better Homes and Gardens?
I actually work for Fox Footy, mate. Yeah, I'm actually on air. I mean, it's really rude of you, mate. I mean, if you ever flicked on, you know, 504, you know, live and exclusive. So I think that's bad news if you're a punter. I think for Thursday nights, we're going to get 15 games, the first 15 rounds from 2025 on.
Yeah.
I just don't think that the AFL is keen to have ordinary Thursday night games. So right now, the AFL can flex enough games onto Thursday night, but they involve the Gold Coast and the Port Adelaides and the struggling teams, the Gold Coast. And so what they want is to start the season and the rounds with a bang. So I think at some stage there they might be able to get agreement to get two 5 day breaks for each team before and after the bye. Yep. And that would mean that more teams would play off 5 day breaks, but the big teams would play on Thursday night. You know, I think we had a poor Thursday night game a couple of weeks back, and it just started the round with a lack of momentum. So everyone wants Thursday every week. Everyone wants a 7:20 start time. I just don't think Andrew Dillon's going to deliver that for the people in the near future.
Yeah, it's interesting. So what you're saying is the AFL could go all Thursday nights if they wanted to, based on, you know, the maximising the day breaks and the players getting rest.
Yeah, because every team's allowed 1 5-day break under the AFL CBA.
But if they did that, you're going to get a Gold Coast v GWS based on the mathematical formula, the fixture they do.
And we
as a society probably don't want that.
Yeah, we want to be able to have a massive Thursday night game that kicks things off. It's a fantastic talking point on the Friday, and then we get Friday night football, and the rhythm of that round is really fantastic. Can I just give you one on how unflappable this bloke is?
Yes, Dillon.
Andrew Dillon, So we're at the Gather Round Friday lunch in the convention centre there, and Peter Malinauskas forced Gil McLachlan to tell a story about meatloaf. And Gil didn't want to tell it and was a bit bawdy, but that's just what happened. But it just, for me, it illustrated why this bloke is so extraordinary. So basically, after meatloaf, which was, of course,
well-documented.
Yeah, a disgrace. It had to be sort of taunted onto the MCG because it was sprinkling with rain. So Gil McLachlan made a public statement. He said not only has he been ashamed of the MCG, he's ashamed football. In fact, he's ashamed of the world. He's disgraced the entire world. You know how Gil just sort of gets rolling on these kind of things. And so after that, Andrew Dillon, who, of course, is his legal counsel, says, mate, I actually think you've defamed meatloaf. And I think he could sue you.
Wow.
So anyway, Gil was worried about these things, the running joke, et cetera, et cetera. And as Gil McLachlan told this story to Peter Malinauskas on stage, he said, I've been with him for 23 years. He goes, it's the single time that I've ever felt that Andrew Dillon's worried. So through the Essendon scandal, through the tanking saga, you know, through COVID that nearly ruined football and had to force the AFL to borrow $500 million or whatever it is from Marvel. He said, this bloke's just entirely unflappable. Mm-hmm. He's just never been worried, never been distracted. It just shows you how steely his nerves are. Now, the end of the story is that Dills texts Gil McLachlan one morning and says, mate, we're off the hook. Meatloaf's died.
Oh, no.
And Gil, of course, on stage is pumping his fists, and then he had to say, put it into context. But I think the nub of that story and the truth to that story is that Meatloaf was the only person that could scare the shit out of Andrew Dillon. And so I just think it shows you how well-placed we are with Andrew. He might not be the sexiest candidate. He might not even be the best candidate with Brendan Gale out there, but he's been able to be entirely unflappable through the greatest crises and the greatest opportunities that the AFL has had in 23 years. And I think that's why he will be a very good AFL CEO.
Yeah, and just one last one on him. So he obviously isn't Gillon McLachlan. What do you think his style will be?
I think it'll be really powerful behind the scenes. He's not going to be the wisecracking, song and dance man that Gillon McLachlan has been, which we saw in, full force. He's not the charismatic bloke that Gil McLachlan is that can get the deals done. You know, again, that Friday morning of Gather Round, Gil McLachlan said on radio, we're going to have Gather Round here for the, it should be here. He took away all of his leverage. He totally stuffed it up. But by the Monday, he was able to, the Sunday, he was able to say, here's our deal, three years, $80 million. So Dills wouldn't make that initial mistake, but he'd still drive a really hard bargain. They'll get to the end result, the right end result in the end, but Gil can, have flaws and, have dramas and have controversies, and he just is a bit Teflon. Dills won't make a single mistake in his tenure in terms of that stuff because he's just so unimpeachable. He's so attentive to details. He just doesn't make mistakes.
It's fascinating. I think the public perception of Gil, people like him. Mm. You talk to people, he's, he's cool, he's funny, he's suave. Dillon might not have that at this stage. It's just going to be fascinating to watch how the public is drawn to him over the years to come and what they perceive him as. And actually that doesn't mean much because you're right. It's all, it's an administrative job, but there is this, there's this nature of how does the public associate with the CEO of the football league?
Yeah. And I said, like Gil McLachlan, you'd call him up at times and you'd say, what about this? He'd go, I've got no visibility on that. He was such a big picture man and he was such a deal maker. And that was fantastic because, most of the things he did were big picture. Throughout his career, Andrew Dillon's been the micro man, hasn't he? So he knows where everybody's buried. He knows where every dollar, is allocated. And so if you're a country football club, for Gil, he might say, that's fine. We've lost 15 country football clubs across the last 5 years, but we've brought some more through in Queensland. Whereas I think Andrew Dillon's the bloke that will say, no, as he said on AFL 360 last night, we'll reduce your fees. Mm. We'll do everything we can. We'll try and cut red tape. And if you are that Mount Eliza football club that's able to, bring through more kids now because your registration fees have been reduced, that's really important. So I think a lot of people are going to really... he's going to thrive on the small details. And I think a lot of people across the industry are going to welcome that.
Now, quickly, we'll just hit to Tassie now. So this is recording a Tuesday morning. We think that the AFL is going to make a significant announcement on Wednesday granting Tasmania the license.
Yep.
Now, there's been back and forth, Tassie. There's been a lot of covered. But if you're the CEO, you're the chairman of Tasmania 2028, you're Peter Gutwein or whoever, who's your CEO, who's your captain and who's your coach?
Your CEO is clearly Brendan Gale. Who's your captain? I mean, it's just you're just throwing darts, really, aren't you? Given that it needs to be.
Is it an Alex Pearce? Could he come for 2 years? Is he?
Your coach is clearly Chris Fagan.
Yep.
So I mean, even if Chris Fagan can win a premiership at Brisbane, you'd think within 5 years that it would be the perfect time for him to move on and accept that challenge. You get an elite band of assistant coaches there. Doesn't matter if they're Tasmanian or not. There's a little bit of a misnomer that the captain needs to be a Tasmanian. Mm. It just needs to be a Joel Selwood style uniting figure who can build the culture. Doesn't matter where where he was born. He just needs to bring together these kids. It needs to be an elite $60 million administration and high performance facility. And you're just going to have blokes who like the path less travelled, who like playing golf or going to Mona or bushwalking in Cradle Mountain. And as silly as that sounds, you need people of that sensibility because if you get Christian Petracca there and then he realises, hang on, this is not the,
Or James Sicily.
Or James Sicily or any of those guys, well, they will depart. There have to be, the kids who are drafted there, that's fine. They'll go there.
Yep.
There has to be 10 players across the competition, elite players at 26 years of age, who are going to absolutely thrive in Tasmania.
It's interesting because we are throwing darts, but that player is out there right now. He's in the system. So whoever the 2028 captain in Tasmania, it's likely he's playing AFL football now. So Who would be, if we're throwing one more dart, who's your number one trade target then as a 20-year-old right now in the system who's possible, who's a potential to actually move?
So you know, for instance, let's call it 2027.
Yep.
So it's going to be those players like Cozzy Pickett who are going to come out of contract in 4 years. So those guys who are free agents from this year.
So it's a Will Day. It's these sort of
players. Yeah, it's a Will Day. And you know what? You're going to have to pay someone $10 million over 6 years. You're going to have to get that figure who of course has got leadership capacity, but you put your flag in the ground and you say, you know, we're going to give him Gary Ablett style figure. Now, it's impossible to know who that is because Gary Ablett wasn't a great captain of the Gold Coast, but you'll pay that bloke so much that you'll give him an offer he can't refuse, the Godfather-style offer. He'll come in, he'll give you the leadership capacity, he'll give you seven or eight really good seasons, and it won't matter that you've probably burnt a couple of million bucks extra because he might set your club up for the long term.
Ralphie, as always, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
I'm Andrew Rule. I try to shine a light in dark places and tell honest stories about dishonest people. If you like sunny stories about shady folks, join me for my podcast, Life and Crimes. It's available from Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your fix.
Now we're joined by trade guru Jay Clark. Jay-Z, how are we going?
Going good. I hate that term, trade guru.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I prefer Geelong leg spinner.
A leggy.
Yes.
Oh, we'll have to delve deeper into that later on. Anyway, Jay, Cozzy Pickett, he's the big trade target. He's off the table.
Yep.
What does that mean for the rest of the competition and the value of this trade period?
Yeah, it's super news for Melbourne, isn't it? Because there was a doomsday scenario if they lost Jackson and Pickett. They were the two picks from that draft, 3 and 10, I think. And that really is a key part of their new core. And after losing Jackson, although the return looks unbelievable now with Fremantle dropping down the ladder, it was clear even from a board level, they just couldn't afford to lose Cozzy Pickett. I don't think other clubs ever thought there were a huge chance of getting him. I wouldn't be surprised if he's the All-Australian forward pocket this year. But a four-year deal, you see Melbourne's list strategy, there is a lot of long-term contracts there. So Petrarca, Gawn, Oliver, they've all been done into the long-term, even going to Harms a couple of years ago. So they've locked it away. It helps protect him from Tasmania. And he's going to be a real pin-up boy for this Melbourne team. I think that, you know, there'll be the occasional nibble from a WA club or an SA club. You know, they got to keep him honest a little bit. The question probably for Melbourne now is the ramifications, because this is going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, what do you reckon, what would you be signing Kasai Pickett for? Do you reckon this would be worth?
I'd be having at least an 8 in front of it. Is that about right?
I reckon you'd be starting at 7.
Yeah.
With maybe some upticks and incentives. So if he has a crackerjack season, then maybe. But
just his role at the moment, you know, these any forwards that can roll into the midfield and have such an impact, it seems to be the hot thing.
If you can win the contest forward of the ball, so who are we talking about? We're talking about Charlie Curnow. We're talking about Toby Green.
Josh Rochelli.
Kasai Pickett. If it's one-on-one in the forward half of the ground, these guys are the breadwinners, right? And they're super players and they're bums on seats, guys. So I reckon it would start with a 7. Done no work on that price at all, but I reckon that's where it'd be around about. So who falls out then for Melbourne? Because we know there's a bit of a logjam there now with the key players that have got. Grundy comes in on 600. Collingwood pays the other 200. So you look at someone like Tomlinson.
Yeah.
Question mark. He's not necessarily a regular 22. He's on okay money.
And they tried to get rid of him last year. Essentially, they shopped him around a little bit.
Yeah, I think there was conversations. I don't think there was any little huge amount of interest. No disrespect at him. And the other one is probably Harms.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think they want to keep Chandler, who's
looks really good.
Yeah, having a really good season. So that'll be the balancing act. They lost Wiedemann, obviously, last year. Brought in Checky. So
lost Jaden Hunt as well. So those fringe players.
Yeah. I think there'll be some more changes around the edges, but Melbourne sort of keeping who they want to keep. And Jackson, like when you look at that deal now, considering, what is it, Fremantle's pick 3 or 4 or 5 or top 5 pick, should have a look at the ladder, plus a second round pick, plus a pick 13, I think they got. Like, it's an unbelievable deal for Melbourne. So, and Jackson's been going okay. But anyway, great result for Melbourne Footy Club. Put a lot of work into their culture. I think it's a big tick for Simon Goodwin, who's got a close connection with him.
Now, is there a flow-on effect for other potential trade targets out there in terms of, you know, the pie and all this sort of thing, what they can offer? Or was Pickett on his own in terms of his role. It didn't seem like there was a suite of small forwards out there.
No, like a domino effect. The one I was watching for Melbourne, if they lost Cozzy, was Jade Gresham.
Yeah.
I reckon if they'd lost Cozzy, they probably would have had a look at Gresham. He's a free agent and he's playing pretty much well mainly forward now.
Yeah.
He could have been a like for like. Melbourne's in the premiership mode and premiership window. So that was probably the domino effect. I think now with Cozzy staying, I think their interest, if they had interest in Gresham, is probably zero. But I think with his role change, Gresham, he's a really interesting contract watch because ideally, I mean, I tried to speak to him after they lost to Port Adelaide.
Yeah.
Club wouldn't let me speak to him.
Really?
Which often happens when players are out of contract. But I think the question for Jade is, does he want to play midfield and become a premier midfielder, or is he a forward? I think his running capacity doesn't match those of the current states, like Ross and Steele and Wood and these guys, and that's how Ross's game plan's working. But he sort of doesn't have that tank, so he's playing mainly forward, where he's got the tricks, but he probably hasn't had the start to the season he would have liked, and under Brett, he was very much a midfielder.
Yeah.
So he's one to watch.
And another name, Clarkie, Darcy Parrish, you watched him on Sunday playing against Geelong.
Yeah.
Where's he at, do you think, right now?
Yeah, I think he stays at Essendon.
Yeah.
There's a water to flow under the bridge there. I don't think Geelong's interest is as massive as possibly it was made out to be at the start of the season. I think he's second in the competition for clearances, right? And he definitely has become a more damaging player under Brad Scott. I don't think he can become the top paid player at Essendon because he's not as good as Zach Merritt.
Yep.
So it's just say Zach Merritt's on about 850.
Yep.
It's got to be under that at Essendon because of the structure. So is he a 750 player? I reckon that's about right.
Hmm.
Just sort of, you know, thinking out loud, etc. So I reckon with Essendon's progress, I reckon he's more likely to stay. I don't know that Geelong is banging down the door as much. And Darcy would be trying to think about, look, when can I get some success at Essendon? He hasn't played in a winning final like all those guys. But I think he has become a more damaging player, and that probably has been the story around Darcy Parrish for the first half of the season. Is 750 about right for him? I reckon it probably is.
And as we've discussed a number of times, Essendon does have the money for him, which probably helps in trying to retain him.
Yeah, I reckon that's really interesting in the sense that Essendon's got a big salary cap space, a big war chest, about $2 million, but when do they spend it? Because you would probably say, you know, this trade period, like, they're probably not quite ready. You know, they're not, I don't think they see them challenging for a top four spot yet. So do they forward pay, front pay a lot of their young players, like get Perkins locked away, you know.
Hobbs is still out of contract.
Yeah, all these guys. So lock up that core. Draper probably, he's already signed, but like sign the priority players.
Yeah.
And then do then in 18 months' time, like at the end of next year, do you then have that, the crack at the big fish? And that's Ben King when he's out of contract. Does Ben King and Peter Wright work well in the same forward line? Maybe.
They've done it before.
Ben King and Peter Wright. They have it at Gold Coast. That's right. Yeah. But are they the same? What question I'm wondering, are they the same type of player?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I think they're probably very similar. Do you need different ones? Anyway.
You don't say no to Ben King.
No, you don't. No, they'd have him in a heartbeat, wouldn't they? So, I gut feel Parrish stays. I think there's a bit of water to flow under the bridge. When do they spend that money, Essendon? Because they've got it. I think it's interesting. I think Brad Scott, you hear him, he's really patient. We're in for the long haul yet. I reckon he'd be saying, oh, maybe hold, and maybe have a go at something in 18 months' time rather than this year. But certainly that defence, I mean, Brandzerk actually got monstered. And Laverty has been a really good, you know, really serviceable.
Very underrated.
But is he their premiership fullback, Jaden Laverty? That's
maybe
what they'll be thinking about their premiership team
in
sort of 4 years' time or whatever. So I think a key defender would be high on their wish list. Yeah.
Clarkie, Essendon are fascinating. Thanks for your insights.
Yep. Go on, you will. This is Brownies
Podcast. G'day, it's Jonathan Brown, the host of Brownies Podcast. Along with my boys Dino and Campbell Brown, we give you the world's loosest podcast.
Was Jesus well hung?
Tell you what, boys, never been prouder.
Your son loves Fast and the Furious, burning things, and he likes burning people.
You're only loud enough, dickhead, to hear you.
Oh! Ask your smart speaker to play Brownies Podcast or search for Brownies Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast.
Now, we're joined by Chris Kavanagh, our draft expert here at the Herald Sun. Chris, how are you going?
Yeah, good, well. Good to be here.
Now, there was a big game on Saturday, 12:10, I think, was it, or 11:05 or something ridiculous in the morning?
11 o'clock in the morning down at Port Melbourne, yes.
North Port Oval to see one kid, Harley Reid.
Yep, and he's a very exciting kid, obviously, likely number one draft pick this year. There was clubs from pretty much every club was there. I saw Stephen Silvania, I saw Kinnear Beetson, I saw Rowan O'Brien from West Coast. All the list managers were there, and Harley won the first centre bounce of the game, a clearance, and he's a pretty special player. You just look at him and you go, wow.
Just to backtrack on a little bit, so this was his first VFL game, so he's played games, obviously, in the NAB League, academy matches against the Port Sandford, but this was sort of his first test against men, so to speak.
Yep.
What? How did he go? And also, was there any extra attention given to him, given the hype that we know about this kid from Tongala?
Well, there was extra attention given to him by Footscray, significant. I mean, as soon as he went to the first centre bounce, he had an arm across him. Footscray was very conscious of him and wanting to stop him at every opportunity. And I mean, for a large part, they did. He had 13 disposals, 5 inside 50s, 2 clearances, but 6 score involvements. So he still had quite a big impact on the match. For a large part, he was held quiet, but and he's had bigger games in the Coates Talent League this year. But he's recruiters were very keen to see him go up against some men and some better opposition because the feeling was he's just too good for the Coates Talent League playing against other players of his age.
So that extra attention that he was copying, how did he deal with that?
Oh, he handled it really well. He didn't get too frustrated and he worked through it. I mean, he's a big body. He's strong and he was able to still win the ball, win his fair share of the ball.
So it was highly anticipated to see how he would go. So what was the feedback from recruiters in the aftermath of that performance?
Yeah, I mean, they were very happy with him, obviously. I mean, I spoke to a recruiter this morning and you mentioned Harley Reid's name and their face just lights up. So I said to this recruiter this morning, I said, who's the second best player in this year's draft? And he couldn't give me a name. He said the gap is that far from Harley to the next best. There's no one else sort of jumping out in that top 10 that is a clear number two at the moment.
And what interests me, obviously, you mentioned all the recruiters are there and they're watching him. Mm. Does that mean... Do we think clubs will try and make plays at this number one pick, whoever gets it? Or why is there so much interest if it probably is going to go to a West Coast or a Hawthorn?
Yeah, well, obviously West Coast was there. But, I mean, I think some clubs will try and snag that number one pick if they can, if anyone's willing to give it up. But at the same time, I mean, Tom DeConing was playing in that game as well. So there was a... You know, Sydney's got a bit of interest in him, St Kilda, Sauce. So, there was a bit of interest in him as well, but a lot of were also having a close look at Harley.
And is he playing more VFL games throughout the year as well? Is this just a one-off? Or how does that work now?
No, he's going to play a few more. And obviously the national championships are coming up too, so he'll be playing for country in them. He'll play a few more games for Carlton as we go.
And you've obviously been covering the draft the last few years. So where does he sit, do you think, against the likes of Ashcroft and Dacos at the same time as them when they were sort of going through the system?
Yeah, I mean, Dacos was probably at another level, but Ashcroft, he's right up there with Ashcroft in terms of hype for what Will was last year. I mean, probably more, really. So, there's a lot of excitement around Harley Reid.
Beauty. Kev, thanks as always. Well, that's all for today. Thanks for joining us on the Footy Podcast. I'm your host, Will Hogan. Thanks to our guests, John Ralph, Jay Clark and Chris Kavanagh. And as always, stay tuned to the heraldsun.com.au website for all your footy coverage throughout the weekend before we hit the biggest opinions on the Sunday and Monday tackles.